Trust for Sustainable Living presents Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast about the environment and the issues our planet faces. Today, we will be speaking to Emma Mervelainen as part of our mini-series on green jobs. Today's episode is hosted by Kirsty Shakespeare. Emma is the Chief Commercial Officer at Tree Buddy Earth, a Finnish eco-tech organisation with a mission to tackle climate change, promote biodiversity and support local communities of tree planters by reforestation around the world. Emma holds responsibility for commercial strategy of the organisation, overseeing sales, marketing, investor relations and customer support functions. Prior to working for Tree Buddy, Emma lived in the UK where she studied biological sciences at University College London and worked at large biotech companies.
Okay, Emma, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me here.
You're very welcome. It's great to speak to you today. I'd love it if you can introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your background and the sustainability role that you're currently working in.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm Emma Mervelainen. I'm the Chief Commercial Officer at a startup called Tree Buddy Earth, and we're based out of Helsinki, Finland. And a bit about my background. So I studied biological sciences at university. Admittedly, I focused more on the human side. So I went to work at biotech companies straight from my studies for the past, well, many years. And last year, I decided to pivot, as I've always been interested in climate sciences and also coming from Finland, where about 70% of the land is covered in trees. So I felt it was a natural step for myself to pursue a role at an organization focused on, I suppose you'd say natural techniques to combat climate change.
Fab, and tell us a little bit more about Tree Buddy and your role there.
Yeah, so Tree Buddy Earth was founded after a couple of decades working in the not-for-profit side, where our founders, so our current CEO, Pekka Harju-Altti, was working with local networks of schools and tree planters in many, many different countries, mainly around Asia, for different tree planting efforts in those regions. And him along with a few others, then decided to commercialize the efforts of Tree Buddy Earth a couple of years ago in order to enable businesses, but then also individuals as well, to take part in the reforestation movement. And I joined the organization almost half a year ago now to really help ground the others with the commercialization efforts to ensure that we're reaching out to different businesses across different sectors all around the world. My role is to help Beck and the others with the commercialization efforts to help reach businesses who are looking to join the reforestation movement in order to either reach specific sustainability goals or climate goals, or who are looking to actually compensate for the industries that they're working in, or businesses who are looking to bring what we would call climate positivity to their own employees or to their customers and partners.
Definitely. And part of your role, as I understand it, is to make the operation as transparent as possible. A lot of the students and young people that we work with will be aware of the phrase of greenwashing. And there's a lot of talk about nature-based solutions and tree planting being the way forward. And lots of companies are jumping on board with that, but perhaps not doing it in the most sustainable or in the right ways. And I understand that your role is trying to make sure that Tree Buddy Earth are doing that as transparently as possible. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. And that's a really great point to bring up. Greenwashing is many, many people have become aware of, especially this year in the media, especially after the reports that came out in January about Verra and the carbon offsetting or the carbon credits that they were offering as part of their efforts involved in protecting forests, especially in the Amazon. And so for Tree Buddy Earth, really the concept from before we were a commercial entity, the mission was always to focus on transparency and verifiability. So, you know, we started on a smaller scale, focusing on specific areas where we, along with our local tree planting partners in those areas, could actually provide measurable insights into the tree planting so that the saplings would actually take, and the fact that they were able to then grow and we could measure that growth and then be able to actually measure the impact they were making. So the actual compensation that we could offer to businesses or individuals who were wanting to contribute to that and compensate for their own emissions. So transparency and verifiability have always been really, really key to the organization's values and mission.
Definitely. And I guess the idea of greenwashing could be quite a common misunderstanding in your line of work as well. So it's great that you're able to provide that transparency to people that are trying to make proactive and positive environmental decisions. I wonder, you speak about lots of different contacts within the industry that you're working with. So what sort of people do you work with on a day-to-day or a weekly basis, and how are they involved in the project?
Yeah, so we work with a variety of different types of organizations of people. So as I mentioned already, the not-for-profit arm of the organization before it commercialized was very much involved in building up those partnerships. And there was a sort of two-pronged approach from the beginning. So one was working with local tree planting experts, and if there were also local tree planting focused organizations or not-for-profit organizations in those areas, and then also with schools, actually. So that's been a big part of Tree Buddy Earth's history, is working with local schools and school students to make sure that we're not just coming in and sort of dictating how trees should be planted in those areas, but that there's a very much a community involvement in that. So what we did was, and this was especially made possible by someone at our organization who we called the Tree Master, and he was involved in the conception of that not-for-profit side of our organization. And he's a former teacher himself, so he's reaching out to teachers and traveling around the Philippines and India and Indonesia. Those are particular focus areas for us from the beginning and are still focus areas for us. And he was reaching out to local schools and working with school directors and principals and teachers to work tree planting into the curricula of different schools, and ensuring that we're working with both the local tree planting organizations, but also with younger people in those areas, so that this idea of preserving nature and trees where it is local to them is very much ingrained in younger people in that area. And that tree care then is ensured for a long period of time, so that what we've done is we've worked with these school students to train them on using, we have this tree planting and tree care and updating app. And so the students themselves have gotten very excited, and we've gotten really, really positive feedback where they themselves are actually going out to the field on these sort of field trips with the school and providing updates of the trees they or perhaps former students prior to their time had planted.
Wow, it sounds like you're providing a lot of opportunities for young people to get involved in the project and learn new skills. From your personal experience, what skills have you found useful within the role? And perhaps what message would you give to your 16-year-old self to help you get to where you are today?
Yeah, so there's a few skills that I found very useful in my current role and prior roles that are quite similar to what I'm doing now. So the first skill would be communications. So both verbal and written, they're absolutely essential. Also, not sure if this is really a skill, but just having that self-motivation and enthusiasm, and particularly for learning, it's really beneficial to have that and that curiosity to keep reading and self-educating on topics related to this field and to stay abreast of the latest developments. And these really vary from the sciences, so looking at climate change, you know, what's the latest updates coming out in the research community, as well as on policy. And of course, as we talked about greenwashing earlier on, just staying aware of what is the current conversation. So I would say those are the most essential skills.
So what would your message to your younger self be if you could give yourself some advice?
The advice I would give to my younger self would be to not fret so much about what is my specific career path. I think that it's very important to focus on what interests you at school, but also outside of school. What are those areas that motivate you, that you want to, again, I'm going to draw back on, what are you interested in learning more about? and to then carve out a career path or a future really based off of those general interests and thinking about, okay, well, what kind of job or what kind of job and what type of industry would bring all of these interests and skill sets I like to utilize together. And again, to not focus on, okay, I want to be a lawyer or I want to do this exact type of role, but to focus more generally on what makes you happy and what interests you and what will keep you interested in years to come.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting that you say that. I think all of our previous speakers on the podcast have all started out on a slightly different track to where they've ended up. They've followed a passion and then discovered a new one on the way. So it's interesting that you too have had a, not a career switch, but you've changed the direction you were going in as part of your interests and moved more into the sort of protection side of things rather than the more the hard life sciences. So are there any particular challenges that you say that you face in your role right now?
So in terms of challenges, I would say that in my role specifically, not in the job in itself, well, I suppose it pertains to the job, but again, thinking about greenwashing. So it's false and misleading environmental claims have, they've obviously reached a lot of media attention, especially in 2023. And as I already mentioned, when TreeBuddy Earth was first conceived, there is a focus right from the start of the conception of this commercial side of the organization that we wanted to create a service that was very much verifiable and transparent. However, there are still many organizations out there that are focused on nature-based solutions for combating climate change, and even, you know, different tree planting organizations that don't unfortunately offer much clarity on planting of the trees or the long-term care. So that's definitely been something that has been challenging, to have to rise above the media attention to really emphasize that, you know, what we are doing is very much credible and we have the evidence, the hard facts, the truth on how our tree planting is done and the long-term care of the trees. And of course, I mean, there is a huge, huge positive side to this that greenwashing is brought about, that, you know, it really brings the attention to the individual who does not work in the sector, does not work in this industry, people working in businesses, just consumers themselves as well, into being a bit more critical about what kind of services they are purchasing into. So it's of course great on one side that people are being more critical, they're being a bit more careful, they're paying much more attention to services that are promising these sort of, let's, for example, carbon offsetting solutions. And it then forces those organizations like ours, who are providing solutions that are very transparent and verifiable, measurable, to provide even more evidence than we would have perhaps last year into this. So it's great, but I would say that that's really been the biggest challenge for us.
Yeah, that increased public awareness really hammers home the need for accountability, doesn't it? And like you say, it really means that those organisations that are perhaps have got a little bit further to go or a bit more catching up to do are really being driven to do that now by the raised awareness of both young people and sort of consumers around the world, which is fantastic because it means everyone's moving in the right direction, we hope. So you mentioned opportunities and that nature-based solutions is sort of one of the buzzwords of the moment. What opportunities do you think lie ahead for TreeBuddy Earth?
So opportunities for us really lie in, now that, as you said, this public awareness that has increased monumentally in just the past couple of months. So opportunities for us then come from even larger organizations, more internationally, who are seeking, with a more critical mindset or more narrowed focus on organizations like ours that provide more measurable solutions for carbon offsetting or climate positivity. So that's definitely a huge, huge opportunity for us to be that provider for those organizations.
That's great. And I wonder, have you had the chance to go out on the ground and see any of the projects that you're working with? You mentioned there's a lot of tree planting happening in Asia. Have you been able to go and visit any of the sites?
No, so as wonderful as it would be to go and travel to actually visit the sites, we leave that to our tree master at the organization, because obviously we don't want to contribute to a further carbon footprint by flying around to these locations, especially since they are quite far away. So now with the commercial side of TrueBody Earth, we've decided to focus on four countries, although we do have the capacity to plant trees in other countries, but we've decided to focus on Indonesia, the Philippines, India, and Tibet. Or we really elected that our tree master is the sole person to go and travel around. And really, I mean, thanks to how easy it is to communicate with people remotely, we don't feel the need to go out there so often. So we have pretty stringent requirements internally for how we get the updates on how our trees are faring for, you know, many, many years, where we get updates via either video footage or photographs, and then our tree master will travel sort of every quarter of the year to go check out those sites and do sort of a check-in with the tree planting organizations and schools and ask how everything is going. So as much as I'd love to travel, I do understand why we've developed this model for the rest of us not traveling.
Yeah, it's important to have a strong sustainability policy across the company, isn't it? So that I can understand that one. You mentioned, you know, the advances in technology, particularly that we've had with online communication over the last few years, with COVID bringing Zoom to life for everybody and making remote working a lot more accessible. So how has technology helped and changed the projects that you're working on?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was really one of the key criteria for us for starting the commercial side of the organization was obviously the focus on verifiability and transparency, but then also this connection, this remote connection, online connection with the local tree planters in those four different countries that I just listed out. So for us, we obviously get the updates on our back end, which feed into the software that anyone who purchases or contributes to the planting of at least one tree through us, they have access to that software. They're able to see an image of the tree when it's first been planted, when it's just a sapling, and they then get updates over the coming years, depending on how long they want to support that tree's growth for. Of course, if they decide on the sort of smallest criteria of the number of years, then we pass that tree care on to another organization, or we take on that tree care ourselves. And for us as well, what's been really important with that remote connection is we host what we call Tree Buddy Club. So regularly we host these events where, for example, when our tree master, he travels to any of our tree planting sites, he'll be there live and he'll have interviews or presentations from some key people who are involved in tree planting organizations or are involved with some local schools there. And then anyone who has that tree through us, they're able to join in and listen in and ask questions live as well. And we also do provide the ability for organizations or even individuals to request bespoke Tree Buddy Club events, where they can then request that if we're able to connect with one of those local tree planters, then we can provide them with a virtual meeting or even a virtual event, depending on the demand for that, so that there can be that personal and direct connection.
Yeah, sounds like a fantastic way to do it. It's amazing how technology, even in our lifetime, has developed so quickly and is enabling so much more accessibility around the world, so much more connection, and so much more almost citizen science, I suppose, people being able to directly connect with someone, something on the other side of the world that's a really meaningful project. So that's really, really powerful, positive step that technology is enabled to create within your organization, which is fantastic. And I wonder, on a more personal note, perhaps, if there's been any challenges or perhaps failures that you've experienced in your career, either in your current role or previous roles, that have become a really important learning opportunity for you that you would share with us.
That's a very good question. I would say a failure, definitely from earlier on in my career, would be working in a role where I was trying to make it into something that it was not. And again, it was early on in my career, so I was quite junior within a pretty large organization. Part of me was aware that I was getting an amazing amount of experience across a lot of different skill sets that I knew that I would be able to apply later on I've always been one of these people where, even starting at school and especially going to university, I've always found it much easier to work or study or learn if I'm very interested or motivated by something. And anyway, so in this role, there were certain aspects of that that I did not find particularly interesting. A lot of it was to do with quality control. And of course, some people are interested in that area. I myself was not interested in that area at that time. So I admittedly slacked off a little bit at work. And so I would say that was a, yeah, an interpersonal failure on my part, but it did teach me something. And what it really taught me was that later on in my career, when I had the freedom and I suppose the knowledge to draw upon what I liked focusing on, what I liked doing, what skills I liked using, that I could focus all of these aspects on an area that I was very, very much interested in, that I would, want to read around outside of work or outside of working hours. And that's what then really last year, when I decided to pivot into working within, well, this field that I'm currently in sustainability and helping to combat climate change, that I could do this despite the fact that I hadn't necessarily studied exactly these areas at university. I knew that I was very much motivated by this last year. I was very interested in climate sciences and environmental sciences. And I knew that from this interpersonal failure earlier on in my career, that I should follow what interests me, because I would then be able to motivate myself to really do the best and work as hard as I possibly could.
Definitely. I think your point there also highlights the fact that even in roles that we do find interesting, sometimes there are always going to be parts of that job that are less interesting. Sometimes it's the admin, sometimes it's the policy and the paperwork side of things. But it's important if we can follow our passions that, if we're in a job we're really passionate about and really love, then sometimes even those less exciting bits are much more tolerable because the rest of the job is so important to us. I wonder, do you have a sustainability hero, Emma? Was there someone that inspired you either to get into the sort of the life sciences to start off with, or perhaps that helped inspire you to make that change into the more sustainability side of things?
So I wouldn't say there's just one specific person that has been a sustainability hero or someone that I've looked up to in this field, but I'm definitely in awe of all the different women who work in climate activism, and all the women who work as founders of different organizations focused on sustainability, all the different women within work as researchers in climate and environmental sciences, and those working in roles focused on policy, and I could go on and on. So for me, I mean, just seeing this representation of women working in this area has been very, very inspiring. And women are still so underrepresented in many areas of STEM, including in earth or climate sciences. And that really worrying balance, as women also have a higher risk and will really face a greater burden from the effects of climate change, is something that really motivated me to get into this field. So just seeing this cohort of women that are involved in the area, all collectively helping combat climate change, was something that really inspired me in when I decided to make this transition.
That's great. And yeah, you're absolutely right. As you say, women are much more at risk from the effects of climate change than men. And it's important that we are representing them within the STEM field. So it's great that you've made that change and been inspired to do that by other women in working in the field as well. Have you ever had a mentor in any of the roles that you've had previously that's helped you to get to where you are today?
Yes, certainly. So I mean, I myself consider a woman of STEM. I studied sciences at university and worked, I've always worked in science-based fields throughout my whole career. And there's been a number of women, not as many as, of course, I would hope to have encountered throughout my years of my studies and my professional life, but there's been many, many different professors and different managers and colleagues, even, who've really been huge motivators for me to continue working in this field and to continue thinking about the disparity that we're encountering still in this area.
And are there any opportunities, do you think, within your organization for young people, young graduates, young women, young students that are interested in sort of this kind of field through the organization? Do you have traineeships or internship programs or volunteer programs that they can get involved with?
Yeah, so we do offer internships. I recently hired our first intern, who's also a woman. Obviously, we do hire based on merit, but I do recognize the proportion of women being represented in STEM. So yeah, we definitely have the opportunities. And I would, well, I have many pieces of advice to give out, but one piece of advice for women seeking opportunities in this field and other sort of science-based or science-focused fields would be to seek out younger organizations, organizations that are perhaps in a growth phase. From my experience, going from working at large organizations to increasingly smaller or earlier stage ones has been one where I've realized that working at ones that are a bit smaller or earlier on in their development phase are the ones that are the best to work for, because you really get to have your voice heard. You get to make a much larger impact and contribution to the development of the organization, and having your voice heard much louder is incredibly rewarding. And especially seeking out organizations where you can find a mentor or someone else who's in that organization that is coming from a similar background to yourself. So let's say that would be a woman who has a scientific background, is so valuable.
Definitely, that's great. And what sort of opportunities does your intern be working on within the organization? Is it more a technical role? Are they going to have the chance to explore different parts of the organization?
So again, because the organization is quite small, it's a huge variety of different types of tasks. So everything really from the communications end to focusing a bit on policy as well. It's really just they can touch upon anything. And even if they're not able to directly work in those specific areas of the organization, they'll at least have the exposure to it because of the size of our organization and the culture that we've created. It's all very open and transparent. We are constantly in communication with each other. Even if you're working in a very technical role or if you're working on the other sort of scale or other side of things, we have weekly meetings or even more frequent meetings where we're updating each other on the progress and our current tasks and challenges and just updates. So there's a constant line of communication. So even if you're not working in that specific area, you'll always be able to hear about it and be able to contribute to that conversation about it.
Sounds like a really good opportunity to explore some of those communication skills that you mentioned earlier on that were so important, and see how that works within an organization, and also perhaps pick up some of the transferable skills that are going to be useful within any organization and any role, like the communication skills, the technology practice, all those sorts of things. So it sounds, I'm excited for them. I hope they settle in well with you.
Thanks, me too.
I wonder if there are any clubs or societies that you know of. You mentioned sort of women in science organisations. Were there any societies or clubs that you were a member of when you were studying, or perhaps as a young professional, that really support women in science, women in STEM, or sort of within the climate industry that you're aware of?
Yes, there's plenty out there. I can't think of a specific name for any of it right now, but I do remember that there were quite a few when I was living in the UK that either got together in person. So when I was living in Cambridge, there was a women in working in scientific communications, and that was a very Cambridge specific one. But then I remember there being a lot of different opportunities online. So whether it was just discussion based society or club, or just a group that I found, let's say through LinkedIn or Facebook or some other social media channels, where I could follow conversations that were going on or even contribute to those. And there were also, of course, a lot of virtual events hosted by these groups and societies as well. So what's great is now when I do check in years later, a bit further on in my career, is that it looks like many, many more of these organizations are popping up on a more international scale. And a lot of these are really virtually based. So There are definitely those networks out there, and yeah, a lot more women are recognizing that there is this younger generation of women wanting to get into this field or already work in this field who are seeking that mentorship or guidance.
Yeah, and that are willing to provide that is so important. I wonder, in the time that you've been working in sustainability or you've been interested in it, have you noticed a general change in attitude towards sustainability in the last few years?
So I would say the biggest attitude change has really been in the awareness that it's garnered, whether that's positive or negative. I mean, it to me, compared to even just a year ago, it seems like so many more organizations, whether big or small or whatever industry they're working in, from IT to logistics, so many more organizations are hiring positions in sustainability and ESG and DEI. CSR type of roles. And it just seems like a lot more attention is being paid on this field by companies, regardless of what they're working in themselves. And that's excellent. It's absolutely essential that organizations are taking a stance or responsibility in emissions, in focusing on sustainability initiatives, and wanting to move towards being more climate positive. But again, then with that comes more providers to that need or that demand who perhaps are not working in the most transparent of manners or working towards an actual tangible benefit. It's great that there is a larger awareness. I would hope that that awareness would shift then more to being more critical of what is it? What is that service that they're choosing to use in order to really be a more sustainable organization? So again, just focusing on that transparency, that evidence, focusing on actually efficient manners to help support this fight against climate change that we all need to be focusing our cooperative efforts on.
Definitely. I think you raise a really good point there. Obviously, our focus for this podcast series is about green jobs, but it's important to remember as well that there's jobs outside the typical green job sector that we think about that are trying to become more greener. So it's not just necessarily the typical conservation type roles that we think about, but all industries are certainly, I think, as you say, are becoming a lot more aware, appointing sustainability directors to help operationally make all kinds of businesses more sustainable. So it's important that we recognize that as well. Perhaps we don't need the traditional sustainability careers or experience and skills that we think we do, and that actually all jobs are trying to make this change to be more sustainable, which, as you say, is so important that we all get involved in. That's brilliant. And have you got any sort of other advice that you'd like to offer to young people? You said earlier on you had various tips. Have you got anything else you'd like to share with young people that might be listening that are interested in a career in the sustainability field, be that a traditional or perhaps a non-traditional sustainability role?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really important to, again, not narrow down what you might want to be focusing on or exactly working in within a sustainability field from early on, but to do a lot of reading, do a lot of learning. And one piece of advice that was given to me quite early on in my career was to not just get one mentor, but many different mentors. So I was given the advice to get a mentor within my company, the company that I was working for. So that could be, for perhaps an even younger person, someone within their school, or if they're doing an internship, to find a mentor there. But then also to find a mentor outside of those immediate circles that you're in. And then to find a third mentor, even further outside of that circle. So someone who perhaps is not even working within those fields or within the field of sustainability. And to get a lot of different opinions and perspectives. And really, since the start of my career, I've understood the importance of having these mentors from this host of different areas because all those voices are so important and because they give you all types of different advice that you can then take forward. And it just creates a much more informed decision within yourself on, okay, what type of career path do I want to pursue, or what's my next step? And you are then able to make that decision yourself and not just based off the voice of one person, but you can collect sort of, and this is the scientist of me speaking, but to collect the data or the insights or observations that you gather from all of these different types of people and then make that choice yourself on how you want to proceed next in your career or in your studies or just in your life in general. So yeah, the advice to sort of sum it down is to get different perspectives in order to support you in deciding on how you want to go forward with your professional life.
Yeah, that's some great advice. And how did you go about approaching those different people that you were looking to recruit as your mentors, I suppose?
Just reaching out and networking within my company was very easy to do. I mean, just reaching out to people that I would see every day or whose name I would hear from other people in my organization. And then outside of my organization or even at university, that's really when I started to take this advice that was a bit harder, was searching for people on LinkedIn or asking acquaintances of acquaintances if they knew anyone or if they themselves would be interested in chatting with me and mentoring me. And sometimes even someone might recommend a mentor to you who would actually then recommend another mentor to you or recommend someone who might be a better mentor to you than that person that you spoke with. So it really is just about getting out there and just speaking with as many people as possible and finding those people, those role models or mentors that you want to or that you feel like you connect with and can build this kind of relationship with for quite a long term.
That's great advice. And are you yourself a mentor to anybody?
I'd like to think so. So I've been managing people quite a bit younger than me for a number of years, and I just always draw upon my own experience from having those mentors from early on in my studies and my career and think about, okay, well, how would I want to position myself when I'm a bit more senior in a role or, just down the career ladder, and how would I want to position myself to be able to give advice or just, lend an ear to especially younger women working in sciences. So I like to think that over the past few years, I've been mentoring people within my organization and even some outside of it who've reached out to me again through just that reaching out to people that might know people and just doing that networking.
Yeah, and I think this idea of mentoring is really powerful, and just being able to share and hear other people's experiences and stories and advice and, how they've approached things or how they would look at things differently, I think is so important to be able to have at all levels of your career, especially when you're first starting out and you're trying to make your way and make some of those decisions and asking yourself those big career questions. But either later on in your career, where you're perhaps becoming a mentor yourself, as you sort of are now, how you can use the mentorship experience that you've received and what's been really beneficial to you, and then pass that on to the next generation that are coming through. But I think, as you say, building up that network of amazing minds around you that can help to give you advice and guidance and bounce ideas off at any stage in your career, but particularly when you're first starting out, I think it's really beneficial. So thanks for sharing that advice with us. That's really good. Whoever gave you that advice was very good. They should definitely be one of your mentors if they're not still. So
Or they still are.
excellent. That's good. So they were definitely worth keeping. And we're coming towards the end of our session now. So, have you got any sort of final takeaway messages for the young listeners that are listening to you today and sharing your experiences with them?
I suppose the final takeaway message would be to just continue to be curious. And that's something that's really driven my studies and my career is to just continually learn, to continually read, to continually listen, to continually ask questions, and to never stop that. Learning never ends, even if you're quite senior in your career or senior in your studies. It's always, always beneficial to know what's going on around you, whether it be in the latest scientific advancements or learning life lessons from a mentor, as we just discussed. It's always beneficial to just continue to keep an open mind.
Definitely. One of my favorite phrases is every day is a school day. And that's something that I use with people I meet in all walks of life, from the highest level professors and CEOs, right the way down to the children that we work with, is that every day is a school day. Every day is an opportunity to learn something new, no matter where you are in your career or what it is that you're learning about. So that's great advice. Well, that's wonderful.
Oh, I like that. I'm gonna steal that.
You're very welcome to share it. So wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Emma, for sharing your insights into mentorship and how women are becoming empowered in scientific careers, and the different ways that you're working in sustainability with the amazing projects of Tree Buddy Earth. So thank you for taking the time to be with us today. Keep up the excellent work, and we look forward to hearing more about the nature-based solutions and projects that Tree Buddy are working on in future.
Great. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks very much, Emma.
This has been Speaking of Sustainability, a podcast by the Trust for Sustainable Living. Thank you to today's guest, Emma Vifalainen. Episode hosted by Kirsty Shakespeare. Organised by Kirsty Shakespeare and James Myers. Music by Millie Painter. Find us online by going to trustforsustainableliving.org and join our online education community at tsl.earth. Thank you for listening.